Blog Talk Radio.
Again, I'm your host, Martin Ranger, Coffee the Magician. It's only rightful that you treat it that way because I produce magic. In other words, strap on, be entertained. Sports Lines Finals Prime Time. This is big time. Have our man Lou coming in a little bit late, Lou Matic. There it is, chiming in right on time. Well, Lou.
Yeah.
Like we got right on time. Right on time here. This is the NBA Finals Game 1. Big time previews games at 9 o'clock. We'll be giving you the rundown on the matchups. And, you know, early on in the week, that's what I noticed, Lou. We gave our predictions. You took Cleveland in 6. I said Golden State in 7. And I initially thought Golden State in 6. But this is my thing. This is what I believe people cannot do. You know, you cannot underestimate what a person brings in intangibles as far as a team's level of intensity to get ready for the game. Like we look at the lineups, and I think they're pretty close to evenly being matched. You look at Cleveland. Cleveland has, of course, the best player in the NBA in LeBron James, and of course, behind that, Kyrie Irving and, you know, Kevin Love, he's injured. You got Tristan Thompson. I said that right? Tristan Davis, is it? I can't remember the guy's name.
Tristan Thompson.
I just let you. Tristan Thompson. See, I get him and Thompson for Golden State. Close in name. I just want to make sure I had that right. And, of course, you got Mozgov and Villanova over there with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And you look at that lineup, you know, if they're perfectly healthy, you say, okay, you know, this could be something that may go 7 games. But then you really look at what Golden State's doing with Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Thompson in the backcourt. Those guys alone are going to penetrate you and dust you for about a good 40, 50 points every night. They're going to give you 50 every night, just about. I mean, that's what it's been looking like throughout the whole playoffs. Everybody else, with, you know, especially coming off the bench with Iguodala. Draymond Green, he's special because he brings a certain type of leadership to the team. And I initially stated that this was going to be 6 games. And I gave them an extra game. I gave Cleveland an extra game because of LeBron James. It's just something that he brings to the table. This is his 5th straight NBA Finals. Regardless that he's lost 3 out of the last 5, he's gone 5 straight years in a row. So I can't underestimate or go back on that and say that doesn't have, you know, implicate effects on the game and his teammates. I think they'll rise to the occasion. But the reality is, I don't think they're healthy enough. There's too many injuries, too many things to try to overcome. And it's like this team and Golden State doesn't let up. It's like they just keep pressing on the gas. So it's like they're going to have some type of help, maybe get Sean Merriman and Mike Miller involved a little bit more. I don't know if they're even on the roster to play. What do you know, Lou?
No word on that yet. I know the last couple of games when they played the Hawks, Marion was playing a good amount of the game. Miller played towards the end of the game, but Marion was playing. So I think, you know, the smart thing to do would be to play him a lot during this series, because how better to play in the finals or play in playoffs games than play to people who are experienced? Marion has experience in the playoffs, and he's been in the finals before, won a championship with Dallas. So Mike Miller, too, experience as well. So I don't see why you wouldn't play those guys. Why, like I said again, why not play the people that you pick to bring on the team for this particular situation?
That's true. And, you know, this is kind of what I see, Lou. And believe it or not, see, experience really kind of is the trick word or the trick phrase here. Because most people, when you say experience, you're thinking, okay, a high level of productivity, they can come in and they're going to produce. But the reality is, with that experience, the reality is throughout the whole playoffs, Marion and Miller was not really a big part of the success that Cleveland had. And sometimes I think, to a certain degree, that it can be a little bit overrated when we look at when a team is just somewhat decent. It's like I see there are decent players with experience, but they haven't been effective the whole playoffs since their run. So then now I look at Golden State. This is their first time really to the finals. This is the best record they've ever had. Every series along the way, they've pretty much showed you why they're the best team in the NBA. They've played against stiff competition. They beat the Houston team in 5 games. Could have easily been a 7-game series. You know, Houston practically gave up 2 games. And I think that Houston team was more of a complete team than this Cleveland team. So I don't think they're going to beat Cleveland in 5 because I believe LeBron James will definitely have his handle on it. And I think he can squeak out 3 victories for Cleveland. But the more I'm looking at it, the more I'm leaning towards 6. I'm leaning more towards 6 games in Golden State's favor, especially in that arena. But this is the thing. Like, LeBron this season is undefeated on the road. No, I'm sorry. I said that wrong. He's won at least 1 game on the road this playoff series. So it's going to be infinitely difficult to really gauge how much of an effect that will be or have on this particular game. But, you know, as I look at it, I expect to see Golden State come out and really establish home court. And it's going to be interesting because I want to see how that's going to match up and if those players are going to – somebody from Cleveland has to step up in order to, you know, keep this series within – know the right mindset so it doesn't get out of control.
All that matters in this series is who keeps from being hurt. On both sides, who keeps from being hurt?
Yeah. Because, you know.
Who keeps being hurt and rebounding the ball? Because That's the major factor in this series right now. Who's going to rebound the ball better than other teams?
I look at it. Cleveland, this is just the thing. They did well in acquisitions. They really ought to thank their general manager when they got you know, J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert. If I'm them, I don't know if I even bring them off the bench. Are they in the starting lineup? Maybe one of them are. I know the other one's not. I don't think Smith is in a starting lineup. Iman Shumpert, maybe. But, man, you know, those two guys.
Smith's done.
Right, man. Kyrie Irving's not 100%. To me, that's a big deal. And my honest opinion, that's going to be the biggest problem moving forward. It's the fact that he is not 100%. That's going to have a tremendous effect, even though they got to Atlanta. I don't think you could be, you know, go through this series and not expect at least a certain level of productivity from him because we tell you we both know not only is Golden State astute on scoring, they're pretty strong on playing defense. That's a tough defensive team. They make teams suffer. They cause turnovers very much so, and it's going to be interesting to see how Cleveland deals with that because, listen, they turn the ball over a lot. You know, that's something that goes understated. And those first 3 rounds there, they turned the ball over pretty much. And, you know, Golden State turns those points and turn those turnovers into points, and they take them up and down the court, run a fast pace, and they can get hot. But that doesn't mean that, you know, Cleveland can't neutralize what they do. with LeBron, because let's be real about it. You put LeBron on anybody, that neutralizes anybody. The thing is, you have so many weapons on Golden State. They both can't stick, both Klay Thompson and Steph. But I would like to point within the series, LeBron face off against those guys. I think it'll give them an opportunity and a chance to win. And it's something that I would definitely pay attention to, because the matchups in this series are going to mean a world of difference.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen. You're going to rarely see LeBron going out guarding Thompson or Curry. That's going to be the job of either Irving, Smith, or Shumpert. Those three guys, perimeter guys, are going to be guarding the perimeter guys. The big situation is who is going to be guarding LeBron, you know, on defense. And most likely it's going to be out of Iguodala and Draymond Green.
I put Green on him. Even if he gets burnt, he plays a physical style of basketball. That guy's a leader, too. He just has a presence about him that people listen whenever he speaks. People follow. And I expect him to, you know, be the one matched up against LeBron. And I don't think, you know, it all really depends on what we see, because we might see something that we're not necessarily expect. And it's going to be based on how hot this team is. That's basically what's going to happen. Who's going to come in hot? Who's going to come in on fire? And I can just see, like, you know, Cleveland can't afford to get down in any of these games. They just can't. And they can't afford injuries. And I look at Golden State, they're still pretty strong. And nobody's been relatively injured. I know Klay Thompson basically passed his concussion test. He'll be suited up. And that was almost like one of those unnatural, you know, situations where, you know, he just got kneed in his head. But I definitely don't look to see that. But like I said, I got Golden State, and I'm really feeling like saying in six. But I, you know, you got them in six, Lou. I'm looking at it. I just don't see how they can do it. Like I'm trying to figure out a way. I'm trying to figure out, like, even if Golden State had one or two games that went bad or went south, I just don't see them giving up that many games to Cleveland. And I just don't see it unless they steal home court totally. But the last team that was just as physical or pretty physical was Memphis, and you've seen what happened with them. It was up 2-1, and Golden State won the last three in a row. I just think this year Golden State is just a better team. LeBron is – I know you've seen the stat with his efficiency compared to his efficiency to Allen Iverson a few years back, and how he's not really shooting high-percentage shots and making shots at a high percentage, and he's taking a good portion – of the offense, but, you know, it has to be because everybody's injured. But I think you can always wiggle your way out to a young Boston team, Chicago team that basically hated his coach, and then an Atlanta team that's relatively young with its coach as far as, like, playing under a system. So I think that was a much easier path. I mean, Golden State played the most physical team in the NBA and beat them in six games. And it beat a Houston team that had the MVP runner-up. It took them in five. And the first round, what did they match up against? Was it that was an Anthony Davis-ridden youthful team, but they just ran through them quick. I believe it was, what, in five games? So I think that team, that Anthony Davis team, will possibly win two or three games on this Cleveland team, being as it is playing out of that conference. But that's just my opinion. That's kind of how I see it. It's going to be very interesting to see how it turns out.
Yeah. Keyword rebounding, second chance shots. That's the key to these playoffs, to these finals.
You know, you said something, though. With Shumpert and really J.R. Smith has been playing pretty good defense in the playoffs, too, though. I got to really admit it. Both of them have looked pretty spectacular. We can't lie, you know, I can't lie about that or even look at it and say, no, he's just not giving them enough credit. They really are playing a better grade of basketball for this Cleveland team than what they did when they was over in New York. And that just goes to show you about, one, either the coaching, two, or the player that is, you know, considered to be a superstar. I mean, you look at one superstar, you match him up against the other. To me, it's quite obvious which one is actually the superstar, right, between him and Carmelo. Melo doesn't make anybody better when he plays with him. It doesn't make anybody better. You watch him for years, and, like, he never elevates anything. He just elevates himself, and that's it. I hate to say it, but to me, it's like a lazy play. But the reality of what I see. And, you know, I'm always going to catch a lot of you know, criticism for coming out and saying that. But it's the truth. He does not play inspired basketball. He plays like a player that is only for himself. He'll take a good percentage of the shots and only make about 29-30%. There was a guy that played like that. His name was Allen Iverson. But, you know, the difference is that Iverson at least gave you a finals, at least gave you consistent play, even though we just came to realization and see, like, this segue, don't you, Lou, how Iverson basically came out and was called, I guess he was in a book or something, was stated when he was talking about the practice that he came in to that interview drunk. Now,
yeah.
I don't know what you think of that, but, I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, over the years, I've seen all of these different things going on with Allen Iverson, especially outside the game, and it doesn't surprise me. I mean, from day one, even before, you know, he came into the league, before the draft, there's always issues with this guy. So situation like that doesn't surprise me. After the game, and that was during the playoffs when they got put out by the Celtics, I guess he wanted to drink his sorrows away from losing.
I say a lot of people really don't even get the whole scenario to a certain degree. Like, they listen to the soundbite and they make the comments. But see, it really goes to show you the mentality of people that are considered to be champions and great versus people that are really good and talented but never really reached their potential. And we have to be honest. I mean, Allen Iverson is going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, unless it's because people just want to hold a grudge against him. But the reality is, and like I've always stated, these certain things separate others from greatness, you know, from regular to really good to great. There are certain intangibles that separate players from greatness. And the Michael Jordans and the LeBron James and the Kobe Bryants, see, this is what separates them and puts them in their own special class by themselves. The Wayne Wade, you know, Isaiah Thomas's, Larry Bird's, they're put in a separate category because they understand the gravity of practice. That's a simple concept of showing why this person regards this aspect of the game at such a high level. And it's, some players are sad to say, new guys coming in, I'm not going to say they're all new guys because it's old guys that had the same mentality. And that's why they weren't considered to be great. But it's the ones that yearn to just work and work and work, the grinder. It's when you have the ability and then you're able to grind at the same time that this puts you a step above everybody else. And this is the thing that just pretty much was a mystery for Allen Iverson. Sad to say, but it's true. Nothing in particular to go against his personal character, but it's just his work ethic. Your work ethic says a lot about you as an individual. People measure you by what they see. They see your efforts, and they measure your whole career based on those efforts that they see. Now, look at this. That interview's been over a decade old, right? And still to this day, that interview is used as a catalyst to judge this guy's career. That's what it is. Young people that don't really pay attention to the sports, you know, the fair weather fan, all they can go back and refer to when they think about Iverson is practice. We talking about practice. Right? That's what they use. They use that as a part of his failure and later on in life, and, you know, it'll be much more of a debate where you say, well, you know, I'm not completely broke. Yeah, you're probably not broke where you're going meal to meal, but you made over $200 million. And trust me, you're not sitting on nowhere near that. You understand what I'm saying? So it's just to me, it separates. You look at the people that were superbly great and look at their life, look at their career. The Magic Johnsons, the Michael Jordans, the Kobe Bryant, they maintained their dollars, the millions of dollars. And it was all really because of the mentality. They refused to let anybody else have any edge on them, so they take advantage of every aspect of the game. That's what they do. You'll never hear Kobe Bryant talk about it's practice. You won't hear Michael Jordan saying it's practice. LeBron James, it's practice. Tim Duncan, practice. You won't hear that from those guys. They've etched themselves in history and based their whole career on their hard work ethic. See? Look at the people that have questionable work ethic, questionable training. You ever take a good look at that, Lou? Look how it pans out. They have this big plethora of ability, you know, a wealth of ability, physical traits, and jump out of gym as fast as light. But the understanding that they just don't have necessarily the mentality or the mindset to have better practice, to be better dedicated to your craft. And this is why they fall off. Mike Vick was the same way. All that ability. You've seen him, right? This guy was probably one of the fastest NFL players we've ever seen, especially the fastest player to ever play a quarterback position. He would just run away and nobody could catch him. But then you look at his work ethic. Oh, you know, last guy to come in, first guy to leave. You know? Oh, he doesn't really watch too much film. He doesn't spend time in the film. He doesn't spend time with his teammates. They always consistently give these examples, or they do certain things that particularly separate themselves from a certain level of greatness, and they'll never be held in the same conversation. I think the last guy to kind of get away with it, and this is only to a certain degree, was Charles Barkley, right? Barkley had, you know, he was over 300-plus pounds, but he was that gifted and talented. He was a real hell of a basketball player, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Barkley's one of the best power forwards to ever play the game. You'd have to consider him to be at least in your top 15 to your top 20. He has to be in at least in your top 20. I would suspect, right? He might not be in your top 10. He might make it on the outside. But amongst 20, he'd be in your top 20. Him, Karl Malone. But look at their careers. You remember those Phoenix teams that he was on?
Yeah, Phoenix.
Absolutely.
Phoenix was pretty much a mediocre Western team until he got there in the first year. You know, they had the best record, I think 63 wins. And he got league MVP.
I mean, it was a stretch for 3 years where they lost a number of champions, right? They played the Bulls, lost to them, and lost to the Rockets 2 years after that. And they took the Rockets teams to seven games. they wanted no cakewalk. Those games could have went either way. And I tell you what, had they gotten past Houston, who knows what they would have done if they got to the finals. Because even with the Bulls, that series went to six. Remember, it took a Steve Kerr game winner, right? To force it. It could have been a game seven. And that's the thing. Michael Jordan never got forced to a game seven, but it was pretty close. It was pretty close. That game could have been going right back to Chicago had Kerr not hit that shot. And it's funny how we're talking about Kerr now, who didn't have the best ability to look at his work ethic. I look at him as a coach.
Gone.
That's why he's able to get the best work out of the place.
It was Paxson then.
Was it? I thought it was Kerr.
Yeah.
Kerr hit the 3-pointer.
Kerr was in Cleveland.
Wait a minute. No, man, that was Kerr.
Nope, Kerr was during the Jazz. He hit the shot during the Jazz. During Phoenix, it was John Paxson.
Man, I think what John Paxson go. Wait a minute, Paxson went. What year was that? Was that 90, 91, 92? 93. Jordan, 90, 91. Jordan, 90, 91. 92, 92, 93. No, man, I think that's Kerr. I could be wrong, but I think that was Steve Kerr.
Kerr was 96.
He hit the shot against Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that was back. Paxson led to the basket.
If Jordan was bringing the ball up against KJ at half court, then he threw it to Pippen, who ran down to the middle, then gave it down low to Horace Grant, and then Grant kicked it out to Paxson, who I guess it was either Marley or Ainge who left open. And you see Paxson taking the shot, and you could see Ainge about to put his hands on his head like, oh, no.
Yeah, because, you know, Paxson, he just didn't miss. We all know that throughout history, I think Kerr has the highest three-point percentage in NBA history, right? Like, nobody shoots better from three-point land than Steve Kerr, sharp shooter. Another sharp shooter, or a guy that was clutch, that was very similar to that, was Robert Ory, right? But you were looking at his shots weren't really that difficult. They was really at the top of the key, right? If you gave us, if you say, what's the easiest three-pointer to shoot, it's the one at the top of the key. The ones on the corner and the edges are tougher than the ones that are straight front of the key. But not to say, hey, it's the waning seconds of the game. Those are still big shots. Big shots, big moments. Got to give you props for that.
Yeah.
But you just look at it, man. He, you know, this guy plays hard. And you look at what he's instilled in his team, and they pretty much have mimicked a lot of his personality, and they run their offense very similar to his personality. We know that, you know, Steve Kerr is a big time sharpshooter. He has two sharp shooters in the backcourt. You got Klay Thompson and you got Steph Curry. Who better, right? So he's probably able to go ahead and even get offenses that get them opportunities to just go off, because really they can create their own shot. They don't even really have to have a pick or have to have a double team down low. They can create their own shots, create space, back up, and shoot it. Pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
So, I know we said this game, we already made our picks. Who do you think wins tonight? And why?
Who wins tonight? I say Golden State wins tonight because it's a home game. That's basically it. It's always start out that way. Every time in the finals, I think there's like a few exceptions where the road team would win the first game, and that's very rare in itself. But, you know, home advantage is always a major thing, especially in basketball. That's the whole mental fortitude of these players. Like when you're at home, you're more relaxed, you know, all of that stuff, and you come out with more of a stable mindset. Whereas you're on the road, you're more tensed up, you got the crowd against you, you also have the thought of possibility that little home cooking with the refs against you as well, which has been proven to be true, especially when we go back to that little incident that happened with Phoenix and the Spurs a few years back in the playoffs.
Yeah, wasn't that a worry bump, Steve Nash?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You said the Spurs. Hey, I'm kind of all over the map here. You got to forgive me. it's evident from what we see when we watch these teams. You know, I think that's interesting. So you think they're basically going to win game one, and then after that, they're going to lose four out of the next five games?
Yep.
I thought it was what? Cleveland, Cleveland, Golden State, and then back to Cleveland for game six. Because that's the format we're dealing with. We're still dealing with the 2-2 one format. I'm sorry, not 2-2. Was it 2-2? It's 2-2-1-1.
Yeah.
And if necessary, one, right? They switched it over a few years. Remember, it used to be, what, 2-3-2? So,
yeah, it's 2-2-1-1 now.
Which is pretty cool. I wish it was like that during those Bulls years. Could have won a couple of those championships in Chicago. They won like two or three of them on the road. Really not the greatest. I know they beat Seattle at home. But it's not a Bulls special, so let me get into all the rest of the hot topics going on. Go ahead and stay with the NBA. Of course, we did mention about Allen Iverson and his situation. What else did you say? Did you say something happened with Monty Williams? Or somebody that came off that Oklahoma City staff left? And
yeah, Monty Williams is now officially the assistant coach behind Donovan for the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, so he left New Orleans and went. That's another thing. Like, I didn't understand that firing at all. I don't get it. I mean, New Orleans hasn't been to the playoffs like ever since I've even been born in conception. Have you? Well, neither one of us has even seen them smell up. Since they've moved from Seattle, of course, if you want to count that. But listen, they're in New Orleans, so that's the title that they take. And he gets them to the playoffs, and it's the first time that it's been done, and then all of a sudden they get rid of him. And then you go ahead and
no,
you hire
been there.
Gentry.
They've been in the playoffs before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, not in a long time. Not that I could have.
Yeah,
I've never known them.
In the 2000s. When Baron Davis was playing for them. When they had Baron Davis and
Oh, they were the Hornets.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
Hornets.
Right, with Chris Paul. Oh, that's right.
And with Chris Paul. So
I'm so used to seeing Charlotte. I forgot they was there. And then they switched the name to Pelicans. Which was just the worst mistake you could possibly do. I mean, you could have came up with soul. You could have came up with anything. It's New Orleans for that matter. And well, they really blew that one. But you look at it. I mean, they haven't gone to the playoffs in a long time since then. So you let this guy go. You bring in Gentry. Like, really? I don't know, man. I have a conversation with Calipari, right?
Calipari's not going to do it.
I think he would have considered it. He's always wanted to come back anyway. He really didn't get a fair shot in the NBA once he first came. You know, they basically labeled him for being who he is, right?
Yeah, but do we really know that he really wants to come back and coach the NBA? I mean, if I'm a college coach, why would I want to give up all the advantages I have in college to go to the NBA where I don't have any advantages at all?
You know, but see, you know what, Lou? Because see, that's the difference. You're talking from a person who has a humble mindset, where this guy's ego, you know, that's the thing. When you talk about certain great coaches and great athletes, they have this high level of self. You know, they really put themselves on a certain level or a certain pedestal above everybody else because they have these great abilities and talents. And it's like, okay, he's done it on the collegiate level. He's become one of the best coaches in the game from a collegiate standpoint. But he had one situation where he failed, and it was an NBA. So I could see him from that standpoint wanting to say, okay, well, let me go ahead and give this an opportunity. I have a chance to get a playoff team with a player, by the way, that I groomed and helped mold, you know, to make his game somewhat effective and ready for this level. So it's like those are the things that I look at in terms of, okay, why would he leave? I think those would be one of the few reasons why he would leave. It would be for his own personal gratification. just to say that I can succeed at any level. I'm not just going to be confined to one. You see what I'm saying? I can see it from that aspect.
Yeah, they're not. Nobody remembers Calipari for, you know, what he did in an NBA. They remember him for his greatness in college, and he's in the Hall of Fame. He's already in the Hall of Fame now for his coaching. So, why? There's nothing else more to do.
Yeah, but see, that's once again, that's talking from the fans' perspective rather than his. He's the one with the ego. You see what I mean? And it's more or less like, okay, well, if his mindset is that I could do anything and all things, and then here now the media comes out and says, well, you couldn't do it on this level, so I don't know about it. And it's like, wow. You know what I just realized who's open is the Denver Nuggets. I just seen it on the little wire here that they still need a coach. I don't think Thibodeau would go there. I don't think
no one is going to
be in that situation.
Ain't nobody going over there. They want to go to a place where players don't want to play. The hell with Denver.
What you say? You think they just need to blow up that roster? Just blow it up? Bring somebody
in? Blow it up.
Be fresh.
Get rid of all the people
there. That is very disappointing. I mean, Brian Shaw basically was put in an impossible situation where he didn't have the chance to succeed. His players would not buy into his system. I mean, what else is he supposed to do? He can't play the game for them. But then it's like the mutiny was on, and you know how the NBA is. It's much different than college. And college athletics is all about the coach, right? You have to listen because, for the most part, guess what? You don't get paid. That's the difference. Stars, when they elevate themselves and they go to the professional room, they get the large contract. Therefore, since they get the large contract, they make all the calls. They can make all the calls on who they want to play for, who they don't want to play for. Typically, that's what you know. That's what happens. And, you know, it's a players' league when you look at it. And so that's why he lost in that particular scenario.
Yeah. Then the funny thing in this situation, the players in this situation, especially talking about Denver, they don't have that much leeway themselves either, because just off of that situation themselves. And you have other players in the league that are looking down on those other players for them quitting on Brian Shaw. And now we have this influx of about, 13 possible free agents for this season. Yeah, I guarantee you none of those 13 free agents are thinking about going to Denver. Nobody's going to Denver. No big-time coach is going to go to Denver. So guess what's going to happen, players? You're going to start getting released from the team, and you're not going to get no big contract signings from Denver. No way. Why? You're quitters.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with you, you know, and eventually that is going to catch up. Especially, there's no real major star on that team anyway.
Nope.
I don't see it. I don't see anybody that was a major star. So, I tell you, you know, I'm looking at this, too. I'm actually watching sports, and I'm seeing Serena Williams when she first lost the first set, how exhausted she looked from the heat. Like, she just kind of just came back. It's almost sometimes it just looks like, you know, she's not healthy, and she still manages to win. I don't know how many Grand Slams she actually has, but I know it's got to be up there. She's more than likely, if she continues on this pace, she's going to go down as probably the best female tennis star ever, right? I don't think anybody can really argue with that. I think at this particular point is what? It's Steffi Graf, right? And Martina, not a Trelova. I forgot her name. I forgot that, right? But you know what I'm talking about. Between her, Chris Everett, and some of the other ones. Yeah. Yeah. She manages to find a way to win, and she's back in the French Open final. So that's impressive, to say the least. Whoever thought, remember in the beginning, we thought Venus was going to be the one, right? Remember, she started to win the Grand Slams early on. Of course, she was the older sister, but she was you know, winning matches head up against Serena early on, and she won like maybe two or three Grand Slams, and then after that, it just fell off.
Yeah.
Like, man, it just went, Serena just went on a tear. And know, I know she has to be, she's up there. She's up there. Like, you know, really, both of the sisters, you know, they got the most wins after dropping the first set. And her sister's third all time among the active players. She's number one with 33. The sister's up there with 22. That just goes to show you they know how to finish. And that's really the markings of people that are great, right? You could be down. You could be trailing for the majority of a match. And then when it's clutch time, when it's money time, you can depend on them, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is one thing. And I like the way I've heard it before. They call that the clutch gene. Chips are on the table. When it's time to win, it's time to make a move, they make it. It's interesting. Well, so, you know, that's primarily what's going on so far. We'll get back to it. I'm going to slide to the NFL real quick, and I'm looking at Adrian Peterson basically saying he wilds the Vikings in practice. Well, why is this a surprise? Does not anybody know that Adrian Peterson is the best running back in the NFL? He is. He just, matter of fact, you got to look at it. He got suspended pretty much around game six, and he wasn't injured. He just was suspended. So he's had a full, remember, he came off that ACL tear. He had rushed for over 13 or close to 1,300 yards coming off a bum knee. And then now he comes in within the first five or six games, and he has the rest of the season. But he's been having all that time to rest and train, and he comes into practice. Do you think he's going to be shabby? There's no way that's going to happen. He is the best running back in the game, and, you know, I expect him to possibly try to make a run at that record. I know before it's all said and done, I think he's going to have all the records as far as, like, rushing yards. I know he's already up there already. He might be behind LT somewhere. But by the time it's finished, he's going to be somewhere up there within the top three. I mean, you only got Emmitt and Barry Sanders really that sit on top of that throne, and you got a couple other running backs that are pretty good and solid. Curtis Martin, of course, Hall of Famer. So it's not going to be a surprise.
Yeah.
That's pretty fantastic. Also, around NFL, you know, you got situation here with the Broncos owner, you know, Pat Bowlen, and his son basically was arrested on domestic violence charges. You know why this is kind of like crazy, right? Because first off, it's an NFL executive, number one, and it's the son, and then the guy's white. It's the first time that I've seen charges being brought on a white person. Ain't that something?
Yeah, they got to balance things out every once in a while.
Every once in a while, but as you say, the reality is that he doesn't have action on the football field. But see, this is what I notice about the NFL and a lot of times the media. You remember when Incognito was bullying or got caught for bullying Jonathan Martin and how they portrayed him, how they basically set up sympathy and made sure that he was covered, that you got the full story, right?
Yep.
And when that's rearranged a little bit around, you know, the reporting gets skewed a little bit, right? Not exactly the same. It's not identical. It's not balanced when it's, you know, Greg Hardy at a Cowboy. So it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to say and how that's going to work. You know, Pat Bowlen's big-time owner. John Elway, great relationship with him. This is his son, and who knows? We'll see. Try to figure out what happened. But, I mean, he's not. I mean, it's his son. They're not going to probably fire him or anything, I doubt. But not exactly going to, you know, change the reality of what's going on. So that's got to be very disheartening. That's the second thing. Remember, in the Broncos organization not too long ago, they had somebody that had DUI, remember? I don't know if it was the vice president or one of the high-ranking members that had a big-time DUI just last season.
That's the owner.
That's like the second.
One of the owners.
You know what I mean? the one and only. Look at that. Had a DUI just last year. So, you know, that doesn't really bode too well for what I see from them. And moving forward, they need to go ahead and take care of that before it becomes a bad situation. Remember, also one of their star players, defensive end, they got his name. Von Miller. Remember, he had a similar situation with marijuana. got suspended for the first six games. Now your offensive lineman, he's basically out. Who was Peyton Manning? This was, you know, pretty much for the most part that Peyton Manning's last season is pretty much gonna be right here. Gonna be right here. So, you know, gonna be eager to see. I'm seeing D'R. Smith in warm ups basically with the hoodie over his face. Just off that sight that I'm seeing, I'm picking him to lose tonight. Right now, Lou, just based on that.
You know, he's not the first to do that, right?
I know he's not the first to do it, but I'm telling you, first impressions mean a lot. When somebody comes in for an interview or for a job and they display a certain kind of behavior or they display an action, that salts you on their personality regardless of what happens afterwards. You're going to base it on that first encounter. It's everybody does it. We can't help it. Sometimes you see a nice looking, you know, attractive young woman, and you see her for the first time, you do something and say something wrong out your mouth, guess what? You're going to be dirt to her for the rest of the time she sees you. You can forget about it. Same thing for a boss. If a white guy you see in the middle of the street and you're a black guy, you turn around and you say something antagonistic towards his direction, he's going to look at you as somebody violent. And if you go to that interview, guess what? You're probably not going to get the job based off what? The first appearance. Your first impression on things makes a difference. It matters. It matters, Lou. And you know it matters. And I'm watching them. It's just like when John Wall first came
in. Does he have this hoodie on during the interview?
No, he doesn't. Not that I know of.
So he's just shooting around with it on?
Yes.
So what's the problem? It's a shoot around, and he still has his hoodie on.
It's like this, bro. If I don't see
just trying to find an issue.
No, that's a big time issue. It's like
no, it's not.
It's a mindset. Yes, it is. It's a mindset. The guys that are serious about their work come to work serious. The serious guy's not gonna do that. It's not the fact that he had it, it's the way he had it on. He just had the hoodie on with his head exposed and he's shooting. He basically had it as if somebody was like, he was about to come up and pull a gat on somebody, like about to rob somebody. So Coley couldn't even see his eyes. I'm surprised he even knows the ball going in on the shoot around. And see, it's a certain level of maturity that you got to have if you expect to win. Based off that, I'm sorry.
Oh, now.
That was
you never had your money on him anyway then, by that logic, because this isn't the first time he's done that.
No, that's not true at
all.
That's not true at all. As a matter of fact.
How do you know?
You know,
have you watched every game of him this season?
No, I have not. But that is beside the point. The point is that I was going to say, you know what, I'm thinking – by the shift, Joe, I'm thinking, we know Cleveland might actually pull tonight. They might be surprised, and they possibly could. Well, based on what I've seen from him, I'm changing. Yes, I was.
He never was doing that in the first place, trying to pull a beam.
Absolutely. No, that's absolutely false. I definitely was looking at them to actually compete and actually take game one. I think that would have been a good way to – and they still might do it. But I'm just basing it just off that. He don't see. I expect businessmen to come to a meeting with business. Business attire, business suitcase, business mindset. I expect them to be professional. And I expect you to be on point. Like, I don't even want to see you smiling really too often in the pregame. Everything's serious.
Yeah. Nope.
You know what? I'm I'm looking at Tiger Woods, man. You know, Woods is finished, man. He's done. Can we come out and just say that right now, bro?
I've been waiting for you to say it. I said that months ago.
Well, I gotta agree with you, then, Luke. I'm gonna stop fighting you on this because he is done. It's a wrap for him. He's finished. He doesn't look anything like himself. Now, I'm gonna tell you something. I don't know if it was not 2014, but 2013. He had a pretty good season, even though he didn't win any majors. He was highly competitive in all his matchups and all his golf tournaments. So, you know, I really looked at him to say, okay, he was going to make a good turnaround in 2014, but all he did was get injured again. And then now you watch him now, it's like, man, this guy's like an average golfer. And I would never think to say that I would ever say that about him. Just the sheer dominance this guy. This guy was... Who was better than him at that particular time? You remember that? He made people interested in golf. Now, it's one thing to play golf, and it's another thing to actually watch it, right?
I didn't either
yeah,
one.
Lou, if we went to go play some putt-putt golf or some golf, it would be
not
fun.
The same
hey, you know, but, well... Listen,
yeah,
we can get
putt,
an idea.
Putt is different from regular golf.
Well, you know, putt-putt is the closest thing that we can say because we haven't been on an actual golf course and we know it's a really challenging game. And, of course, you have to do that. But, I mean, just the idea of actually playing, I would rather much play than watch. I know I would. I definitely would. I would play over watching. Nobody paid attention to golf. So I just look at him. He's a shell of himself.
Yep.
It's terrible to watch. It's heartbreaking. It really is. So, you know. That guy, man, I don't know. He hasn't gotten back on track. And, you know, the sad part is all he really needs is one. He wins one, and it's going to open the floodgates for everything else. I think that would relieve the pressure off him.
Yeah, it's not going to change anything. Win one, he's still going to be the same.
I don't think he'll be the same. Lou, I say if he wins one, he won't be as great as he was before. But I can say this. I would say that he actually would have that weight lifted off his shoulders, and I think he will relax more, and I think he would play a whole different way. He'd be more confident in what he's doing. And, you know, we'd have to see. I want to get into this before I leave. You know, I'm seeing Jameis Winston up here, and I got to give him his credit so far because he's really exceeding my expectations. I never knew that he was going to actually be on schedule, work extra hard, show out the way he's been showing out in practice. He's looking good. He's looking fantastic. And, you know, they got him in there. He's showing up. Of course, he's competing. But more than likely, you know, he's going to be the starter. I mean, first draft pick, best prospect since Andrew Luck. He's going to start somewhere along the line. We don't know if it's going to be game one. We'll have to see after preseason. But I got to say, I'm pretty rather thoroughly impressed by what I've seen from him so far and thus far. I got to give him credit. I would have betted against him, obviously, because I didn't think he had the mental capacity for the NFL game. And maybe it is kind of early, but I tell you, he's really showing me up right now. I didn't think he'd last this long. I figured it would be something. You know what I mean? But it's not. It's not. And it's really good for him because, listen, he played right up the street, right? He's right there in Tampa. He played right up there in Tallahassee. That's literally, what, a 4 to 5 hour drive? If that. So,
yeah.
He should be right at home. And he's going to mature, and I expect him.
I think he'll last longer than Johnny Manziel.
Oh, Johnny's done. We might as well put a fork in him. He's finished. You know, he's basically throwing his career away. And that's the sad part. It's not even really whether or not he can play. It's the fact that he won't play. He's that mentality situation. You know, he skated by in the college, and now on a professional level, you have to take the time to go ahead and do your business and handle your business. You got to be dedicated. You got to have a strong work ethic. You can't party all the time, especially when you're the quarterback, right? It's not sinking in for him, so I don't know what really is left to even say other than, you know, it's curtain. He has – this season will be his last. If he doesn't do something in preseason and get over the humps and stop getting in the news, he's going to be finished. And sad to say, but it's true. Somebody's so fantastic to watch and on the college level and how he just basically just throwing it away. Whereas there is that guy in Philadelphia that who I talk about on Sunday who's still surprisingly on the roster. But of course, you know, you got the third stringer running his mouth now. But we're gonna see. We're gonna see how that works out and what maps out from that situation. People forget, listen, he started already and went to a playoff game and won. Okay, Barkley, you haven't done anything but sit there and almost get traded. So we'll definitely get into that come Sunday out, because I'm going to make sure I remember that. But we're going to enjoy the series. Lou, we both got Golden State, and we know my reasons for taking them today. But anyway, I could be wrong, and we'll see. But I got Golden State in seven games, and possibly, I should have said six. Too many injuries. But I'm going to go ahead and say seven. I can make LeBron and get him three. And, of course, you got Golden State tonight, but you got LeBron winning four out of the next five games after game one. So we're going to see. One of us is going to be right. One of us is going to be wrong. So we're going to go ahead and leave everybody with that. Beautiful music. I'm your host, Marlon Ranger. And, of course, we got my man, Mr. Lou, Lumatic. On the right, we pumped this song. It's a great, wonderful song.